This special food insecurity episode of Unorthodox is sponsored by Meir Panim, Leket, Israel's National Food Bank, and Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger.
Shalom, chaverim. This is Unorthodox. I'm your host, Joshua Molina, and today, folks, it's just us. I'm here by myself. That's right. Stephanie and Liel are off prepping for Passover, and they left the door unlocked here at headquarters, so you got me. And today, I'm happy to say, I have something very special to share with you. You know, each Pesach, we begin our Seder by declaring, "Let all who are hungry come and eat," inviting to our tables anyone who needs food. And in a perfect world, we would interpret the line literally, throwing open our doors to the hungry. Most of us don't do this. But at the very least, let's have Passover remind us how many among us face food insecurity, and let's pledge to investigate ways to improve the situation. Thousands of people struggle with hunger in the U.S. and Israel every day. And there are many Jewish organizations fighting to close that gap, from food pantries that give out warm meals and children's books to interest groups that address food insecurity on a national scale. Hundreds of these organizations work year-round to help Jews and Gentiles alike. But today, as we approach Passover, we're going to focus on just three, and we're going to look at how each tackles the issue from a different angle. Up first, we're going to take you inside one of Israel's busiest food pantries. Our producers, Courtney Hazlett and Ellie Blyer, recently visited the Jerusalem branch of Meir Panim, which distributes meals to all who come. They met Mimi Rosmarin, Meir Panim's Director of Global Development. They met with the volunteers who make it all happen. And they met some of Meir Panim's clients, many of whom have been displaced by the war. Have a listen.
So welcome to Meir Panim's Jerusalem branch. This is one of five of our Meir Panim branches around the country. You can see we're here in our main dining hall. We started our lunch service about 20 minutes ago. Our goal here is to help people who are suffering for food insecurity come in, have a warm meal in a family-like environment. They come in, they choose what they like. We have proper china plates, proper silverware, and they sit down wherever they want and can meet up their friends and just be taken care of like a member of a family. And every Tuesday in each of our branches around the country, we have farm fresh produce delivered through Leket Israel. And we set up in those back tables over there a free market. So Tuesdays are a particularly busy day because people are coming not only to get their daily meal, but also to get their produce shop for the week. Anyone can come in, no questions are asked. And I think that's something that's really special, especially in these times that are a little more tense or a lot more tense than usual. Anyone can walk through the door of any faith, any language, any denomination, and come in and be welcomed like anyone else and sit where they please and just be taken care of. Passover preparation starts like literally today. So we have matzah deliveries in the corner there. We have Purim decorations still up. So it is usually a tad more calm. But lively is great, and we want our patrons to feel like they're coming somewhere where they can be really like with dignity and respect and just taken care of and feel like everyone else. We go into the kitchen? You want to come into the kitchen side? Okay, so this is the main tray table situation, and patrons are coming in. They get a frozen soup to take home, you can see, and a hot soup. And then on the proper china plates today, they're getting potatoes and these meats, balls, kebab sticks. Always hot soup, all homemade from our amazing staff and volunteers. I'll take you into the kitchen so you can speak to some of our folks back there. This is the Meir Panim Jerusalem kitchen. This is one of our Shevrut Liumi volunteers, Miriam. Shevrut Liumi translates to national service, and it's a program for anyone in this country that isn't able or isn't wanting to go into the proper army as part of their mandatory service, and instead they come in, they do volunteers, and there's, they have the opportunity to choose a volunteer placement where they'll serve and give back to the country in a different way for a year or two. In many of our branches, We have 18 to 21-year-old young adults that come in for a couple years and give back in a different way to the country.
What are you doing right now?
I am doing the dishes here at Panim as part of my national service.
And you look very busy. There's a big pile of...
I'm quite busy at the moment. I'm here 5 days a week, serving people, doing dishes, and taking care of the people here.
What's your name?
I'm Danielle Phillips.
Where are you from?
Philadelphia, in the United States.
We're about 15 employees throughout our five branches, and that includes like our three administrative staff here in Jerusalem. So our volunteers are doing everything from cooking meals, packaging them up, delivering them to people, delivering them to bases, delivering them to hotels where displaced families are being put up, really everything. But the best volunteers come in and just say like, what can I do? So, you know, from peeling carrots to delivering meals, to working with kids in our after school, to organizing the supplies that we did supply drives the first weeks of war for goods for soldiers and for displaced families. And we had such an outpouring of clothing and sweatshirts and household goods that like we still have a warehouse where people can come in and take what they need. So we're still continuously stocking our warehouses and our little spaces. Every nook and cranny of Meir Panim is really dedicated to giving and helping people. We have an amazing relationship with some other food insecurity nonprofits in Israel. We're all really working together to help people. So Leket is an amazing partner of ours, and they work directly with farmers to donate their products. So they not only give us trucks full of farm fresh produce every week, but they produce these frozen soups.
I have to say, for people in the United States, this looks as nice as anything you would get at Erewhon or Whole Foods.
100. And it's, I know Erewhon's very fancy, but like all the ingredients are farm fresh and, you know, local, because all the farm things in this country are local because it's such a small country. So it's really beautiful. They make it, and it's been an amazing boon for our patrons to be able to fill up their freezers on days where they can't get down to the branch to be able to have that here. So we're back here at the back kitchen of Meir Panim Jerusalem, and this room, this is a very cool room because this room didn't exist 6 months ago. And we built in this walk-in fridge freezer situation. I'll give you guys a peek in. All of those soups you saw at front and meals, and this was built in each of our branches. We put in one of these big fridge freezers right at the beginning of the war because we saw a tremendous increase in need for us to be preparing meals for displaced people and for frontline troops. And the infrastructure that we have did not nearly cover what we had in terms of what we were putting out each day. So we have a branch in Sfat is our most north branch. And unfortunately that branch was closed for dine-in patrons for many, many weeks due to rockets from Hezbollah in the north. And just a couple weeks ago, they had a red alert siren while we were serving our lunch. So that was quite scary for the staff there. We have a branch in Tiberias, which is also taking care of a tremendous amount of displaced people from the northern border. We have a branch in a town called Or Akiva, which is right adjacent to Caesarea, which is also taking care of a tremendous amount of displaced people in the north. We have here in Jerusalem, and then we have a branch in Dimona in the south of Israel, which is taking care of a tremendous amount of displaced people in the southern borders. Thank God, many of them have gone home. About a month ago, Deirot moved back in many of those smaller Gaza adjacent towns. But over the past 6 months, we've really been taking care of 15 to 20,000 additional meals each day from what we usually do around this country.
What was the usual prior?
About 2,500 meals a day between our branches.
15,000?
Yes. Some of our branches were opening up, coming in at 4 o'clock in the morning to start running the ovens to meet the demands. And, you know, we've been able to recover and get to a place where we are still helping tremendous amounts of additional people a day, but not anywhere near the needs, close to 20,000. So Meir is to brighten and Panim is face in Hebrew. And so what we were really established to create a different kind of soup kitchen where people can come in and feel dignified and a part of the family. A place where people would have a respite, not only for a meal, but also for a place where they can feel comfortable and at home, and somewhere where they know that in the winter it'll be nice and warm and we'll have a hot bowl of soup for them waiting. And in the summer it'll be air conditioned and comfortable And that's the sense in each of our branches, where we want people to feel like this is a second home for them. Just last year in 2023, it was rated the most expensive place in the world to live, and there's a very high tax rate. So the average Israeli really has a hard time making ends meet. 1 in 5 Israelis are living in food insecurity. One of our branch managers always talks about her goal for her life and her job is to have people come out of Meir Panim with a straight back, so that they feel like they don't have to worry about food. We got this. They can focus on really trying to make improvements in our lives and us using our connections in the community and the network to really help them find their footing and serve as a safety net for as long as you need it. But also, we want to help you improve your life and make changes so that you can go out and be on the side of giving. And anyone can come in through the door. And even though there are people that are saying, you know, coexistence is dead, just to know that there are places, 5 places at least, around this country where anyone can come in the door, feel like a part of a family, be taken care of, not have any questions asked. It does feel like good for the world.
You can learn more about the work Meir Panim does at israelcharity.org. Okay, so that's the front line of the effort to combat food insecurity. It's the most visible part of fighting hunger, but let's dig in a little deeper. Perhaps, like me, you've wondered who actually gets all those ingredients and that donated food to the food pantry in the first place. Well, in Israel, there's at least one easy answer to that question. It's Joseph Gittler. Joseph is the founder of Leket, Israel's national food bank. He and his team, along with a huge, huge reserve of volunteers, rescue surplus food from farms and restaurants, and they transport it to the organizations that need it. After October 7th disrupted so much of Israeli life, including the tending of farms across the south, Leket began to support the farmers it relies on more directly. Here's Joseph Gittler. So, Joseph, I'm delighted to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
For those who are not familiar with your wonderful organization, can you tell us about Leket and about its special, distinctive approach to addressing food insecurity in Israel?
Sure. So, Leket, we can start like this. Leket's a biblical term, one of the 3 biblical terms which commanded farmers on how they had to take care of the poor. And we've modernized it because in wealthy Western countries, food is just wasted with abandon. So we don't have to force farmers to leave a corner of their field or to not pick up things that fall off the wagon. For those who remember their Hebrew school lessons, we don't need to do that because, simply put, in the United States, Israel, we estimate 35 to 50% of food just goes to waste. And so what the Lekets of the world do is we look for sources, in our case, of healthy, nutritious, safe food, and we figure out the logistics of getting it and the logistics of getting it to those who need it, which in our case, like most food banks, is working with partner agencies. So soup kitchens, homeless shelters, battered women's shelters, over 300 agencies throughout the state of Israel who get food support from Leket. Until October 7th, we were on pace to distribute over 30,000 tons just of fruits and vegetables in 2023,
wow,
utilizing a team of about 150 employees, but also about 50,000 volunteers working in the fields, working in our distribution center.
So if people are even visiting Israel, there's an opportunity if they wanted to come and lend a hand for Leket.
Yeah, I think about 50% of our volunteers, because most of our volunteers are one-offs. They may come again, but essentially they come, you know, once for a couple of hours, they help out. And that's open to anyone. It's not work that needs much training, you know, 2 minutes. It's the kind of work that people can do happily for a couple of hours. And I think it's also an important lesson because we see after a few hours how people say how hard it is, how backbreaking it is. It gives people an appreciation that there are people all over the world who do this kind of work day in, day out to keep us fed.
I'm glad that you said that. It's easy to forget what goes into bringing our food onto our tables and into our homes.
Just yesterday, my house, my son, my youngest son, did a bad job making some eggs and he threw them out. And I said, do you know what it took for these eggs to get here and not even get broken, you know, from the store to the house. Do you know what it took? You can't throw away anything. So we're quite strict in our house.
It's got to be a lot of pressure to be your son and cooking for you.
Well, what I would say is that, you know, I mean, you would probably get this a little better than me, is, you know, I tell my kids that the paparazzi is outside trying to get a photo of Joseph Gittler, you know, throwing away food.
Throwing away an egg.
It hasn't happened and it won't happen, but it's a nice thought.
Can you give us an idea of what the numbers are like in Israel in terms of those that are facing hunger, and also how things and how the situation has changed since October 7th?
The official statistics talk about 20% of the population living at or below the poverty line. Now, I think we can always take numbers like that with a grain of salt. There's a large cash economy. There's, you know, people who get help outside the system also from relatives. So, but let's say it's only 10%. You're still talking about nearly a million Israelis who need help. And they need help because the cost of living in Israel vis-a-vis the salaries is quite frightening. And so people really struggle to make ends meet. And again, because we can get this food for pennies on the dollar, that being our logistics costs, it's just so sensible. Besides, of course, the volunteerism and the environmental aspects of it. So it's just such a sensible solution. When they talk about, oh, we need to create more food, grow more food, I don't really buy that, because we're wasting so much. We just need to make sure that the food gets from those who have it to those who need it. And that's really what, that's the really the point of like taking someone's trash, turning it back to gold, and then getting it to those who need it.
That's fantastic. And how has October 7th impacted the situation in Israel?
Look, I think the poor are still poor. It hasn't helped them. It hasn't hurt them. But what it has created is a lot of chaos. So for example, many of the agencies in the South, at least for the first few months that we work with, were shut down. Then you had people who had never been poor and who won't be poor in the future. And just this temporary hit, you know, having to evacuate and run away without anything. And suddenly they need a jacket, they need shoes, because they ran away literally to save their lives. And so, you know, not everyone can afford to go and even, let's think about a kitchen, to just go and purchase, you know, everything you need. If you were placed in an apartment, a lot of people were placed in hotels and they've been served food. But even that's been a very, just think about, even if you're in the best hotel, you know, after 4 or 5 months, if you have little kids, you know, who wants to eat that food anymore? You want to make a grilled cheese sandwich for your kid.
Food.
You want simple mom's food. You know, one of the things we've done to help ameliorate that is we've set up in all the hotels that displaced people are staying, fruit and vegetable stands, just so they can go grab an apple, grab an orange, different kind of things that maybe the hotel's not serving.
And I imagine the situation in the North is also needs to be addressed.
Yeah, so the North is even tricky. You know, the South got the big hit, but now the South is, you know, people are starting to move back. The North is just basically shut down. You're going to have mass business failures. The places that are within, let's say, normal Hezbollah rocket range, that's really understandable. Those people have been evacuated. But you have, for example, the Golan Heights, where it's generally, you know, I say in Hebrew, Al tiftach pe le-satan, don't open my mouth to Satan, where it's generally been quiet. It's all based on tourists and no one wants to go up there now. People are nervous. So,
sure, of course.
You know, we're trying to help. What Leket's doing for the North specifically is trying to help the farmers up there. We can't buy their goods because they can't pick them. So we're just giving grants, cash grants, which again, doesn't come close to replacing their profits, but hopefully the little bit of money that we're giving them is one among many that will help them survive and then decide they're still going to go back into farming. Because if too many farmers fail, then we have a food security issue, a national food security issue that's not just about the poor, it's about everyone. And so we need to do what we can to help that. Of course, that's bigger than us, but we're doing the best we can.
And if people want to learn more about Leket and make a donation, is leket.org the place to go?
That's the best place to go. Lots of information there. If anyone wants to be in touch with me, joseph@leket.org, info@leket.org, please be in touch with us. We've grown tremendously since the beginning of COVID. We took another big, big step during the war. I am sad when we grow because of disasters. We have a strategic plan. We'd like to grow according to that strategic plan. But I'm very happy that we've been, you know, especially since October 7th, which has been tragic on so many levels, you know, that we've been able to react and help. And I know now we're starting a big new project now, which is giving grants to farmers to help them buy equipment, seeds, if they need money just to pay their electricity bill. That's going to be a major project for us going forward as farmers return, assess damage, and try to, you know, make a living for the good of the people.
More power to you in the work that you're doing. You asked me off the air. You offered me an opportunity to volunteer with you. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, the next time I visit Israel, I'll take you up on that.
That would be wonderful. You can come pick in the fields. You can come work in our distribution center. Lots of work to do.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for a great interview.
Thank you.
You can learn more about Leket Israel at leket.org. That's L-E-K-E-T.org. No examination of food insecurity would be complete without zooming way, way out and looking at the issue from a national level. Hunger, after all, doesn't just happen, and it's not just an individual problem, but it's a collective one and a collective responsibility. Government agencies and the laws they operate under play just as big a role in fighting hunger as volunteers prepping meals. One organization working at this level is Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger. I love Mazon. It's a wonderful organization that I first learned about from my folks who were early supporters back in the 80s when it was founded. Remember the 80s? Mazon trains anti-hunger organizations around the United States, and it advocates for systemic solutions to food insecurity in the U.S. and Israel. I spoke with their president and my friend, Abby Liebman, about the difficult work of affecting policy and about the Jewish roots of Mazon's mission. Welcome, Abby. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Joshua.
So I am familiar with Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger, largely because my parents put it on my radar. But for our listeners who maybe don't or aren't familiar with Mazon, can you just tell us what the organization does?
Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger, is 40 years old. It is a national anti-hunger organization working to end hunger in the United States and Israel. Mazon engages in the vital work of policy change. It cannot be the charitable sector alone that responds to hunger in this country. In the United States alone, there are over 40 million people who struggle with food insecurity, which is the wonky way of saying that you don't know where your next meal is coming from. The best and most effective response to that is through our government. So for us, grounded in Jewish values, teachings, and traditions, we see the expression of those values, teaching, and tradition as making certain that our communities and our government reflect what is best in us. And that means that we look out for each other. We do not abandon those who are vulnerable, and we do not judge them. We help to provide for them so that they can enjoy the kind of stability that allows them not just to live, but to thrive.
What does the legislative work of Mazon look like, or the lobbying to get things done?
There's sort of two phases for this, Joshua. There always has to be. There's the outreach and the education piece. Because you have to lay the groundwork for the why and the how. And then you can approach policymakers and say, here's the what. Here's what you need to do. Now, we have a really robust nutrition safety net in this country, anchored by this phenomenal flagship program that is SNAP, that used to be called food stamps. Now, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is what SNAP is an acronym for, is designed to respond to as much need as there is. It is designed to make certain that the more people who are hungry, the more the program will grow to cover them. And when there are fewer, it shrinks. This is what an entitlement program is. The amount of money that we spend on this is enormous. And if all you did was look at the dollar amount of the total, you'd be shocked. It's about $100 billion a year. It is a shocking number. Now, again, remember, there are over 40 million people. Now, the average amount of money that an individual gets on SNAP is about $2.50 a meal. This is not any way, shape, or form a lot of money, right? So if you're talking about, you know, $7 or $8 a day, but it's 40 million people and it's 365 days a year, this is why this number gets so big. But again, it's highly effective in what it's doing. People do not spend a lifetime on SNAP. They spend months.
And there's something called the Snap Challenge, which I remember you encouraged me to attempt, and I did for a week many years ago, which is trying to live on that $2 and change per meal for a week. And it's astonishing. Even when you can feed yourself, nutrition goes out the door very quickly because trying to buy produce is very difficult on that kind of budget.
Right. I did it myself. I went to a farmer's market. You know, I bought a tomato and a loaf of bread and I think some lettuce. It was like $12. It's like, wow, that is stupid. Okay.
It goes quickly.
Yeah. You have to make really difficult choices and figure out what you're going to eat or not. And my teenage son, he did it too. And what you find is I had bought 3 bananas and I held back on eating them because I knew he liked them. I think that that's a part of the calculus that goes through the minds of literally millions of parents who are on SNAP, is that I will sacrifice so that my children can have more.
Can you talk a little bit about the Jewish inspiration for? I love a charitable, effective organization that helps people non-denominationally. It doesn't matter whether you're Jewish or not Jewish or what your sex or creed or ethnicity or anything is, but I like that there's a Jewish inspiration to Mazon.
You know, the true nature of how we think about our values are really all rooted in the Torah. And the Torah speaks about hunger literally hundreds of times. And the mitzvot that you're supposed to do typically include many that reference the idea of making certain that people are fed in your community. We are really guided by the idea of tikkun olam, which is really, it become pervasive. I don't think it's overused. I think it's just become pervasive because people have embraced their responsibility to help repair the world, which is a part of what it means to be engaged in Jewish social justice work. That is a guide star for us. But most important, I think of the caveat about Betzelem Elohim, that all humans are created in the image of the divine, and that we approach one another without judgment, without a sense of a lack of dignity, that we are all human, we are all together, and that we are not allowed to sit idly by while others are struggling. And because these teachings just inform who we are, it seems to me perfectly natural that what we do then is engage in efforts to get our leadership to respond to those who are in need. We need to step up and stand for each other. And that's really what Mazon's mission is about.
In addition to fighting food insecurity in the United States, the organization works to fight food insecurity in Israel. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We fund organizations in Israel that are working to try to establish a government response there. There's a very small government response that's relatively new, and it is sadly possibly shrinking at this moment when there could not be more need for it. Charity alone cannot address this. There are remarkable charitable organizations in Israel that have worked for decades to feed people when they are in dire straits. And a lot of this happens when there are new immigrants to Israel who are struggling to get themselves set up. So we have a special interest in that. And then also in the Negev, in the Bedouin communities, and then also asylees, because these are not communities that share in a lot of the currently existing government response to hunger. And we've been pushing for that to happen, and they've been pushing for that to happen, but it isn't realized yet. And so part of what we tried to do was to step in here and say, in the short term, we have to feed people. And because so much of the Negev was destroyed by Hamas, and that is the breadbasket of Israel, there's tremendous increase in food insecurity there now.
Yeah, and it's probably not fair to ask you about this as it is outside your purview, but right over the border in Gaza, they're facing a potential catastrophe of famine.
Yes. And we do not work in Gaza, but as anti-hunger advocates, we cannot look at this and think that this is anything less than a humanitarian crisis and that it needs to be addressed, that food is not a weapon of war and it should never be. We're capable as Jews of holding multiple ideas in our head at one time. And this is a tragedy of terrible proportion on both sides. And our work in Israel is about raising up the importance of a democracy that is so sacrosanct to so many of us in the Jewish diaspora, to respond to the needs in its country in a way that, again, reflects those Jewish values. Our work in Israel is about that, and it always has been and continues to be now.
And this should be a conversation we have year-round, and I know for you it is, but we're all going to open our Seder by saying, let all who are hungry come and eat, and very few of us do this literally by opening our door and inviting someone who's hungry off the street to come in. So what can we do to fulfill that aspect of the Seder? What is the best way? Obviously, supporting Mazon is a wonderful way to do it. Beyond that, what kind of action can the ordinary citizen take?
I think that it's important to invest in organizations like ours that are working to see change here and not just providing a meal one time, as important as that can be in that moment. But I also think that it's raising your voice at a time when you are being made aware of the commandments that we have to follow, and that the education, the resources, the stories we tell at Passover are all about that. They're about being advocates and about seeking change. And we need to be aware of that in our communities and whatever level. And, you know, at Mazon on its website, there are opportunities for engagement, that is to raise your voice about issues currently in, certainly in Congress, where hunger has suddenly become, and the nutrition safety net, a part of budget negotiations where it never was before. It's a target. And voicing your opposition to making that a target is incredibly important. And that's what we're doing. And that's what we will do. And so if there's something that is an impediment to raising your own voice, then support us and we will raise it for you. Even as you say, we need to think about this all the time. And of course we do. But this is a moment when people will hear us, including elected people. They're the confluence of the ideas of humanity and compassion that arise at this time of year. And we think of this as justice, which is really what doing tzedakah is, right? It is doing justice. But for those of other faiths, it is rooted in compassion. And I don't see those as mutually exclusive. I see them as important complements to each other. And this is a good moment to raise your voice in that space.
Well said. Thank you so much.
I love being here. Thank you.
You can visit mazon.org for all sorts of resources, including their incredible interactive virtual museum on the history of hunger in the United States. I urge you to check it out. Okay, that is our show. Next time you hear my voice, the adults will also be in the room. Thanks for keeping me company. I wish you all Chag Pesach Sameach. Have a wonderful holiday, and thanks for tuning in. You should know that Unorthodox is a production of Tablet Studios. The show is hosted by me, Joshua Molina, with Stephanie Butnick and Leah Leibovitz. Our executive producer is Courtney Hazlett. Our director of production is Josh Cross. And we're produced and edited by Robert Scaramuccia, Quinn Waller, and Ellie Blyer, with help from Tanya Singer and Sam Hacker. Our episode art is by Esther Werdiger. Our logo is by Jenny Rosbrook. And our theme music is by Golem. You can learn more about Me'ir Panim, Leket Israel, and Mazon in our show notes, where you can also find links to donate. Until next time, shalom, friends. Peace out.